Welcome to Muskoka Connects, connecting you to the people, places, and things that make Muskoka one of the most beautiful and interesting places in Canada and the world. Today we connect with Grace Taylor, the author and collector of Twice Told Tales. Grace is an amateur historian, genealogist, and teacher. She collected and published this fabulous collection of stories and letters that give us a real look at the early days of life in what we now know as Ontario's cottage country. First off, Grace Taylor, what gave you the inspiration for Twice Told Tales?
I started out doing genealogy. My mom was interested in having family story told. And when I started collecting information from people, I found that they didn't really want to give me facts. They wanted to tell me about the people. So I would start writing down these stories. And then pretty soon I found that I couldn't keep up writing them down. So I started using a cassette tape recorder and trying to just let them talk.
Did you originally think that you'd be putting this into book form?
My mom had a camera in about the 1930s. So she had a photo album and had collected family pictures. So I had this whole collection, and what was I going to do with it? I wanted a way to share it with people in the family and with people who might be interested in seeing life back in those days. So that's when it became a book, was when I had all these stories from the interviews and all these pictures, and very often the stories started with the picture. People would look at the picture, and then they would start to say, oh, well, that was the time when we had this picnic. And, you know, the story would diverge away from whatever was in, but I tried three or four different genealogy softwares to try and put all this information together, but it never was all that interesting to me, you know. You would type in all those facts, but there wasn't a whole lot of space in there to be telling the story about the person. The story of the picture on the cover is from when my grandmother's family, some of them, moved west. There was a pretty large emigration from Muskoka to the west in 1918 and 1919. So that picture is them on the wagon going to go to the train and go out west. And when you look back at some of the ones in the section about the white family that lived back on what's now Roxborough Road, they had to work really hard to survive. They seemed to have a good time. Everybody that looked back at it talked about the things they enjoyed. But when you look in the pictures, you see there's always a lot of wood to cut. You know, there's big gardens to grow. They worked hard.
The white family, large, and they all had nicknames.
Yes, they did. That was why I kind of put an introduction at the front. That was my contribution, was to introduce the characters, and then the transcript from the interview, I just put it exactly as they said it. So they would talk about these people by their nicknames. So over half of the 12 children in the family had some little nickname that they went by. And so rather than have to keep putting that into the story to explain who they were talking about, I tried to just leave it in their words and then put in the introduction, let you know who those characters were.
Each chapter begins with a genealogy or family tree, so you can follow the trails of the Bowers, Matchetts, Whites, and Skinner families. Why did you do it that way?
Well, I was still trying to make it useful to people in those families, that if the next generation wants to connect back to these stories, that they would know where they fit in. So I tried to put in enough actual facts and their full names, so that if in the future, or even now, if the grandchildren of some of these people who are now adults, if they want to try and connect to the stories and connect to the people who are telling the stories, that they know where they fit into those families and kind of make it a resource for that. I didn't want it to be a genealogy book, but I did want it to be useful to people who are interested in genealogy of those families.
Now tell me a little bit about that interesting woman, Granny Bowers.
Well, Granny Bowers was born in southern Ontario, but moved to Muskoka twice, actually, as a free grant settler. And she lived a very hard life. And I know our family used to tell stories about how she carried a stove from Aurelia because she wanted to have a proper stove, and you couldn't. There was such poor facilities in Bracebridge. There were very few stores at that time. So we're talking, the Free Grant Act was 1868, so that was, there wasn't a lot of development up here. She had a little cabin and a farm, and she lived there most of her life. And when she was older, her house burned down, and she had to move away. And so she moved to her son-in-law's place, and then they eventually found her a little, tiny little shack that she could live in. And it ended up being right across from where St. Peter's Church is, or was. It used to be on the corner of Roxburgh Road and Fraserburgh Road. And she lived in this little cabin, and that's where the SSJE started stopping in to see her. So they came and gave her communion. And at one point she said that she wished there was a church there. And after she died, when the family was getting together, the SSJE came out to Mr. Shire's house, who lived on at the end of that road. And they had a little service, and the SSJE brought up the fact that the grandma had wished there was a church. So at that point, the family said, yeah, well, we could do that. And her daughter donated some land, and then the whole community got together and built that church. And it's amazing to me that recently the whole community again got together and moved that church over to the Pioneer Power Association's property. The other interesting thing about her is that when she was, I think, 83, she sat down with her granddaughter and told her story of all her trials and tribulations and what it was like to be to walk half the way to Simcoe and to be a Free Grant settler. And I included her story in there because I just thought it was a firsthand account of, from a woman's point of view, of what it was like to be a settler. She was kind of bitter about her life by the end because she had come from a prosperous family and she ended up being a farmer in Muskoka, but she certainly survived and did whatever she had to do, whether it was making shingles or growing turnips. She managed to survive.
You're a Skinner. Now tell me a little bit about what you learned about your own family's history.
Well, I learned that Skinners were entrepreneurs because my dad was a farmer. He farmed in Macaulay. In fact, I still live on a corner of that farm. But his dad, Sam Skinner, was really more of an entrepreneur. He liked getting out and talking to people. And when silos first came into use in Muskoka, he started selling silos. And when people started replacing their box soot stoves with furnaces, he sold furnaces. And so I was surprised that they had that sort of background. Other thing I kind of didn't know until my dad told me all those stories was about how much he had done all this hunting. And they used to go hunting foxes and just about anything they could trap. And he was a sharpshooter. He was such a good hunter that they would have a turkey shoot, and if you won, you won the turkey. And so he would have so many turkeys that he'd have to organize another turkey shoot to get rid of some of them. He was a good shot, apparently.
The book also has a few collected recipes. Did you try making frying pan cake?
I did, yeah. It worked out fine. My mom said that the joy about frying pan cake and some of those recipes was that it seemed like her grandma, anything your grandma makes, of course, tastes better. But she also felt that her grandma didn't have, in my mom's family, there were 14. So things had to be stretched a little bit. But when her grandma made them, there was lots of butter and cream and things were rich and tasty and just kind of felt like I had to represent her contribution to the family, because lots of my aunts ended up being cooks. Marie Henderson used to work for some of the big camps, Camp Towingo or places like that, Big Win Inn. Lots of them became very good cooks, and I wonder if they kind of got it from those tasty recipes. The success of a camp depended upon the cook. Men were glad to go back to work at a camp if they had good food that was well cooked. But if they had a bad cook, they could be losing their men very quickly. They worked so hard. Basically, when Dad tells the stories, you know, it was from before daylight they were up, and they didn't come back to the camp till it was dark, and they worked really, really hard. So they needed good food to keep them going. The breakfast they ate were phenomenal, but basically they had to get enough calories in there to keep them going all day.
When did you start to see the change to the Muskoka that we see today?
I think it was happening during as soon as the Second World War started. And up until then, there was still some lumbering. But then it went, lumbering was sort of over and in the late 30s. And only Muskoka Wood figured out how to mechanize and switch to, instead of going for the big pine, they started going for hardwood, which had just been left standing there. And they were smart because they bought up a lot of land, so they didn't have to pay timber fees. They managed because they brought in mechanization, whereas the old lumber camps ran on horsepower and manpower. They were more successful. But that was only one camp, and so all of a sudden that whole lumbering industry was gone, and Muskoka was very poor. People were very poor. There was no other way to make money. If you had a farm, you could still go to the camp in the winter and make some money. There was no secondary source like that. And then the whole region was not doing very well. And then once the men all went off to war, there was no labor force to work on the farms. Up until then, you either had a big family to help you, or people bartered labor back and forth. With so many men away, there was a lot of people that couldn't keep farms going. People who had been cottagers started to be more and more important, and resorts where roads were getting a lot better, so people could come up from Toronto to some of the resorts. So that became more of an important industry. People had to now make their money in the summer by working for some construction company or providing produce to the resorts. That was a really big deal.
Now, near the end, you related the amazing story of St. Peter's Church. I remember following that move, a very interesting move and a very interesting history for that church.
It's a wonderful story, and it's a wonderful result that it ended up there. And it just amazes me that a church that came out of a small group of people gathering together, and then over the years we were sure it was going to be closed down so many times, and somebody always stepped up to keep it going. Then when the Anglican Church had finally said they simply couldn't afford to keep trying to support it, the Pioneer Power Association stepped up and organized the whole movement of it. And Pioneer Power did a wonderful job. The way they've settled it into its spot with a little pine tree up there, it just looks perfect. Even this winter, they had it all decorated. I must give credit. It was Dave Como who moved it, and Peter Croder who helped Ron Leader in the organizing of it. And they allowed it to live on. And apparently this summer, there were some christenings and baptisms and weddings already. And it's now a non-denominational church, but it is a place for people to be able to have a small service, and I'm really pleased to see it there.
Now, for someone wanting to get a copy, when and where will it be available?
Well, I've sold out the first printing, so I'm taking orders for the second, and I'm actually going to be revising it. It will be available. I'm going to be ordering again in March, and I take pre-orders before that. So I have an email at egtaylor. It's like E as in Edgar, G as in George, Taylor, all one word, egtaylor@muskoka.com, which is easy to remember. And my phone number is 705-645-8249. So what I like to do is take some orders so that I know about how many to get published. It will be available a limited number at the Veranda Bookstore carries Muskoka Books, which is Patrick Boyer's company, so there will be some there as well.
All the best for your next printing.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed telling you about it.
The second printing of Twice Told Tales will be available in March. For information, you can check our website at MuskokaInformationRadio.com. For Muskoka Connects, I'm Tim Hearn.